Did you know that under a U.S. Navy-led plan in the 1970s, the state was almost turned into the world's largest radio antenna? Well, the Navy wanted to channel the state's bedrock foundation and use a whole slew of cables to send signals around the world, all from northern Wisconsin.
If it sounds like a wild plan, maybe it was. Ultimately, the cost and the environmental damage the project would have required were enough to kill off the proposal, but was the inspiration for a smaller project in Wisconsin and the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Joining us now with a look at this story is Joseph Stromberg. He's a science writer at Vox. Joseph, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
So you recently dug into this history, this project called Project Sanguine, which would have radically changed the way Wisconsin looked in part of northern Wisconsin. Where did this idea come from in the first place?
So this idea came from a physicist named Nicholas Christofilos, and essentially he was trying to solve the problem of how to communicate with deep-sea submarines. So this is still a huge problem. Radio waves get scattered by ocean water, and the Navy and other countries' navies have to use all sorts of different workarounds to get signals to submarines. And so he proposed generating extremely long frequency radio waves to communicate with subs instead. The only problem is to do this, you'd need a really, really huge antenna that would probably be far more expensive than any Navy would be interested in investing in. And so he suggested using the bedrock to actually generate radio waves instead of building an enormous antenna.
Well, to back up to why it's so difficult for subs to receive this communication, why is that? What happens in the water that makes it hard?
So extremely long frequency waves, they essentially just get scattered as they penetrate down through the water, especially because it's salt water, which conducts electricity better. So usually to get signals from the surface, submarines either have to come to the surface themselves. Some of them trail a little buoy that has an antenna on it. And back in the days of the Cold War, it was a huge problem that subs had to either come to the surface or move more slowly. The Navy was somewhat paranoid about them being detected by the Soviet Navy. And so they really wanted a way to be able to just send signals directly to the bottom of the ocean floor, wherever the subs are around the world. And normal radio waves that we use to communicate simply can't do that.
And how would this project have worked? You said it would have used the bedrock to create these radio waves. How?
Yeah, so essentially, if you could imagine a really long cable stretching miles and miles, and at either end you stick it into the ground. And when you turn it on, the electric current that you send through the cable wants to complete a circuit. It wants to get back from one end to the other. And if you stick both ends into the ground, that electric current is actually going to flow through the bedrock. Now, at low levels of current, it wouldn't electrify anyone or be dangerous. But what it would do is, as that current flows miles and miles through the bedrock and reaches the other end of the cable, the pulse through the bedrock would actually create a magnetic field that would send these extremely long frequency waves through the atmosphere, and eventually they would go all the way around the world and go into the world's oceans. The only difference is, instead of having the cable above the ground, the Navy really wanted to bury it so it would survive a nuclear attack from the Soviets or any other kind of threat.
How close did this project come to being a reality?
Well, the original project, Sanguine, which would have involved burying cables under about 41% of the state, to be fair, that probably didn't come very close to happening. It would have costed billions of dollars and caused a huge amount of environmental disruption. So there were a lot of protests, as you might imagine, from local residents, from Wisconsin politicians, from environmental activists. But what the Navy did was it kept proposing a series of smaller and smaller similar projects. And eventually one of those did get built. It's just called Project ELF, which stands for Extremely Long Frequency, which are the types of waves. And it ended up being a pair of pretty large buried antennas, one in Clam Lake, Wisconsin, and one in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And they operated for, 15 years.
Now, back to this original Project Sanguine, which didn't actually come to fruition. You said it would have taken miles and miles of cables. How much cable are we talking about here?
So the original plan, at its most ambitious, was to bury a grid of 6,000 miles of cables. So it would have looked like a big, cross-hatched, some going east-west and some going north-south, so the signals could be broadcast in both directions, but a total of 6,000 miles of cable. So it would have covered just a huge amount of the state, mostly in the northern portion.
We're talking right now with Joseph Stromberg, science writer at Vox, about the history of Project Sanguine, which would have turned northern Wisconsin into a giant radio antenna. And, you know, the question from here in Wisconsin is, why Wisconsin? Why would they want to do this here in the North Woods?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. The primary reason is that to do this, you need to pick a spot that has the right kind of bedrock. You actually want bedrock that doesn't conduct electricity that well, so that the current you send through the bedrock will go really deep and go along a wide range of paths and generate enough of an electric field so that it sends out the extremely long frequency wave. So that's part of it, is the bedrock, specifically the Canadian Shield granite in the area. The other big thing is that you want a relatively unpopulated area. Obviously, there's lots of people up in the North Woods, but, you know, compared to somewhere where there's more dense agriculture, more cities, people that you're going to disrupt with this construction, it's a little bit less. So those are the main two reasons.
Now, I understand it didn't actually, this idea, work that well, effectively, that is, in communicating with submarines. It sounds as though it worked, but it wasn't that efficient.
Yeah. The thing is, these waves, these extremely long frequency waves, they take a very long time to travel, and you can't encode very much information in them. So the way it ended up working when the Navy built the scaled-down version of it is it would send these waves that were essentially, you know, a code for one, two, or three letters. So it's almost like sending out Morse code over the course of 10 or 15 minutes to submarines around the world. You can't actually send that much information. So in effect, what they did was they used the system to beckon submarines to the surface, like almost like an old beeper, saying, okay, you come to the surface now, we need to send you some information through normal radio waves. And this was ultimately one of the criticisms of the project. As activists, especially anti-war activists, wanted to shut it down, they said, look, you created this huge expensive project and all you're doing is using it as a beeper for submarines.
Well, so this project was ultimately killed. It never happened. It was later revived, as you said, on the smaller scale with Project ELF. Where were those antenna up north? Are there, if you go up there and you poke around, can you find remnants of Project ELF?
Yeah, you can. So the one in Wisconsin is at Clam Lake, which is, I believe, part of a national forest. I haven't been up there. But I believe the site is still intact. A lot of the equipment has been dismantled, but the Navy still owns the land. And then the other one is over in the Upper Peninsula in Copper County State Forest. So, again, the cables are buried. Or, sorry, the cables are not buried. They're above the ground. And they're no longer operational. They're not using it to send signals. But a lot of the equipment is still there, intact.
We got a tweet here from Jenners who said, Project ELF ran near my grandparents' land in the Upper Peninsula. We were fascinated with this as kids. It raises the question, is anybody still using this kind of technology today? It sounds like it's pretty much gone away, the dinosaurs in the U.S.
It has, although the Russian Navy, as far as we know, still, they also built a similar type of setup back in the Cold War days. And the information isn't public, but as far as we know, they're still using it to communicate with submarines. So again, it suffers the same kinds of inefficiencies and difficulties as Project ELF, but the Russian Navy's setup, which is all the way up kind of northeast of Norway in Russia, is still operational.
And why are the Russians still using it?
That's hard to say. I mean, even the U.S. Navy kept most of the information about it classified and for years claimed that it was a really important you know, communication system until eventually they admitted that it was obsolete and because so many politicians wanted to shut it down. So the Russian Navy, you know, doesn't really talk much about their use of it. But as far as we know, they're still using it.
Now, it sounds as though Feingold, Senator Feingold, introduced some bills to get rid of some of the remnants of Project ELF. What role did he play?
Yeah, he played a big role in actually shutting it down when it was active. It didn't close until 2004. And for years and years, you know, partially with the support of different activists, anti-war and environmental activists, he was one of the leading forces in Congress introducing bills to close it. And in 2004, you know, you could give credit to him as much as anyone else for ending the project.
Any idea what happened with the scientist who was advancing this project back in the 60s?
No, I actually don't. He, you know, he had a long career in terms of radio frequency physics and other sorts of things. And to be honest, in terms of his career, this is really almost a footnote. But not sure what happened to him after that.
Are remnants of this technology still in use today, maybe in different forms? We talked about the Russians, but does any part of it still live on?
In terms of Project ELF in Wisconsin and Michigan?
ELF and the whole the extremely low frequency idea?
Not really. Extremely low frequency waves, I mean, they're almost a curiosity in terms of physics because of the fact that you can use them to send information so far and so deep into the ocean. But, you know, you can. There's so little information you can code into these waves compared to normal radio waves or the frequencies we use for cell phones, things like that. Really, the only possible use would be if you're trying to send information down into the ocean. So, as far as I know, it hasn't really been used for any other sorts of practical communication beyond this.
Joseph, thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
We've been talking to Joseph Stromberg, science writer at Vox, who recently looked into the history of Project Sanguine, which would have turned northern Wisconsin into a giant radio antenna.